Even if you haven't read one of James Patterson's many bestsellers, you have surely seen the ads for his books in magazines, the subway, and on television.
James Patterson's new thriller will leave you breathless. What happens when the most glamorous city in the world turns ugly? And one killer has millions running for their lives. James Patterson's Run for Your Life. Every page will take your breath away. James Patterson's Run for Your Life. Run out and get it.
In the cover story of last Sunday's New York Times Magazine, Jonathan Mahler looked into how Mr. Patterson has changed the book publishing industry, and he joins us now along with Sarah Crichton, who published the Patterson novels when she headed Little Brown from 1996 to 2001. These days, she has her own imprint at Farrah Straus in Giroux, and I want to welcome you both back to our show. Hi.
Hi.
Hi there.
Jonathan, let's begin with you. When I think of mass-marketed authors, Stephen King, Nora Roberts, John Grisham, they are the kinds of names that immediately come to mind. Where does James Patterson stand in that pantheon of sorts?
Well, I guess it depends on how you're ranking them. In terms of pure sales, he's on top. In fact, he outsells Grisham, King, and Brown combined. So now. That may shock you, but the principal reason why is that he publishes quite a few more books every year. In fact, last year he published 9 books, and this year he's planning to publish 9 more. So when you're publishing 9 books a year, every one of which is a bestseller, you become pretty hard to outsell.
Isn't he the former CEO of the huge advertising agency J. Walter Thompson? Was it his idea to mass market his books the way you would sell some other kind of product?
That's exactly right. I mean, he was, as he was sort of rising through the ranks at J. Walter Thompson over the course of the 80s and in 90s, he was also writing novels. And, I guess you could say he was essentially a struggling writer, though he was making plenty of money at J. Walter Thompson. But ultimately, he kind of brought his marketing and branding knowledge to bear on his own kind of writing career and really, in many ways, kind of pushed Little Brown and almost ultimately sort of forced Little Brown at times to follow his lead and to do what he thought was the right thing to do to sort of better, more effectively market his books. And it was always, at times it was really an uphill battle for him because Little Brown was, publishers are generally conservative and he was of extraordinarily ambitious about what kind of empire he could build for himself. I mean, he imagined really kind of limitless sales for himself, and of course, publishers have limited resources and other authors to worry about, so they weren't always necessarily eager to dump money into his marketing campaigns. But he pushed and he sold, and at the end of the day, it was certainly, from a financial perspective, a pretty successful venture.
Was the James Patterson machinery already in place, Sarah, when you arrived at Little Brown in 1996?
It was beginning to crank up, but no, I was there when Jim began to insist that he wanted to publish even 2 books a year. And even the idea that somebody would publish, he was already beginning to be quite a big bestseller. But we were very content. The house was very content with his sales. And the way that you normally build an author is you basically hope that each successive book will get bigger and bigger. You'll get a bigger audience and grow your audience. And it was a big deal back then to even have a book come out every year. Say every April, you'd get another book by that author.
You're competing with yourself when you put out a second book within a few months, aren't you?
Yeah, our concern was that he was going to cannibalize his own sales, that there was a finite audience for Patterson or for any author, and that you would cut into sales rather than double them. But he kept insisting that he could keep the same audience, keep growing it, and in fact grow exponentially. And that's actually what he's done.
So is being a mass-marketed author the same thing as being a commercial or a best-selling one?
I don't really know. I don't know how to answer that.
How do we even measure his success? If it's just a matter of number of books sold, and if he's proven that you can continue selling one book even though you've released a new one, Hasn't he really created a whole new approach to publishing?
Jonathan, what do you think? Because I know that you did a lot of thinking about that for your article.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think in a sense he did kind of turn, I guess, conventional publishing wisdom on its head by as Sarah pointed out, continuing to publish more books every year and doing what publishers previously thought was kind of impossible, to continue to grow one's audience, not only to grow one's audience in one genre, because, you know, he began as a thriller writer. He still is principally known as a thriller writer, but he started moving into other genres as well. He started writing romance novels, you know, so-called women's weepies. He started writing children's books. He wrote a children's Christmas book. He started writing young adult novels. Now his young adult books are now sort of quite a big business as well. So all of that was absolutely a different way to go about publishing. And again, if we're talking about it, well, how do you measure his success? It depends on how you're looking at it. Certainly, financially, you can't argue with his success, both for Patterson, who is enormously wealthy, and for Little Brown, who has the publishing house is essentially built on James Patterson's back. I mean, Sarah can correct me if I'm wrong about that, but that they wouldn't discuss the financial specifics with me, but that's certainly the impression I got.
I've always heard, Sarah, that the bestsellers were what made it possible for the publication of more serious literary works by publishers like Little Brown. Is that how it's working these days? I'm getting a sense that serious writers don't have a chance anymore.
You know, I think that you like to pretend that if there's a lot of dough in a house, you're going to spread it around to smaller, more literary books. My biggest concern has always been that what has happened when you gave that statistic that one out of 17 novels in the past 5 years or something has been a James Patterson book. The audience for books has been educated to not take any risks now. You have increasingly booksellers that don't want to take risks, publishers who don't want to take risks, and readers who don't. They want a sure thing. And one of the part of the success of the Patterson books has been that people know that it's what the commodity is. They know exactly what it is that they're getting. And that really creates a whole universe that is in a bubble. And it's very hard to permeate that bubble. And what Patterson has also done is one of the things that, going back to your question about mass marketing, he used tools that are basic standard marketing tools for brands, whether any kind of consumer brand, food, clothing, what have you, is you figure out where you are weakest. And for instance, he realized that he wasn't at one point strong in the Pacific Northwest because they tend to be much more literary there, and that also that he could be stronger with women. So he invented a series that had women detectives set in San Francisco. He just uses a lot of basic standard tools to go after his audience.
The sort of thing an advertising person would do. We're weak in selling Grey Poupon in the Northwest, so let's do something that will increase our sales here. And he's the guy who coined the slogan, "I'm a Toys R Us kid." But I don't know, how did he wind up, Jonathan, going from advertising to writing thrillers first and then all these other books?
Sure. Let me just first make one kind of just add to Sarah's very good point, which is, in terms of, well, taking off from your question that you know, what about the literary authors? And, as I've spoken to people about the story after it ran, people have asked me, well, is James Patterson good or bad for publishing? And I think you sort of have to say that he's mixed. I mean, there's a real paradox here. It's certainly true on the one hand that mass market commercial authors like James Patterson are, in a sense, underwriting more literary, less commercial fiction. At the same time, this whole phenomenon of the rise of the blockbuster and of big authors and the whole publishing mentality, this kind of caution and conservatism and reliance on these big brands is really having a you have to say a really deleterious effect on literature, whose sort of great strength is this wonderful kind of diversity of points of view and opinions and this sort of richness of perspectives that one gets from this great array of books published every year. Well, increasingly, publishers are going to feel, we don't need to publish this or that. That's a little too far afield. Let's stick with what works,
but
what sells.
Is this new? I remember in the 60s, Doubleday, I think, developed an approach that the record companies had done even earlier, where if they saw a certain book was taking off, they just would put all of their promotion behind it. It didn't matter whether another book got great reviews. It was got lost because that book was the one that they were going to focus on and create a bestseller.
I see your question, and I think Sarah can probably speak to it better than I can, but I would say that certainly this has always been kind of a theme in publishing. But now, given the financial pressure and kind of economic climate for the publishing industry, it's so much more tempting than it ever was. And it's so much more imperative to widen profit margins or to make some money. And that means that publishers are going to be turning increasingly to authors like James Patterson and, frankly, not publishing authors whose work is a little edgier, a little riskier, a little further afield. And you know, Patterson himself was aware of this and it was something we spoke about from time to time.
Although I will say, to jump in here, that on the one hand, you know, we all talk about writers like Patterson. The fact is, there's never really been a writer like James Patterson, in the sense that, you know, as a consumer, I have always understood the success of various magazines, who the audience is. I've always been mystified by Cosmopolitan magazine, because the truth is, it always has cover lines that tease, you know, what's supposed to be inside. And in fact, the magazine never delivers. It's not actually a very satisfying read. And yet it's been fantastically, had a huge audience forever. Patterson, these books are not particularly rewarding, I don't feel, and I haven't been his publisher for many years, and so I can be blunt about that.
Well, he doesn't care about whether a sentence sounds good or not. He says that. He tried to be a stylist in the early days, and that didn't do well for him. He understands who his audience is, doesn't he?
He understands it brilliantly, and he really does. People do find him satisfying, whether he's writing a thriller or this or that, a kid's book. You know, for some of us, that ad at the start of this segment is pretty corny. But clearly it can be extremely effective, too.
But I wonder about why his fans are so loyal. One of the things you wrote about, Jonathan, was involved a plot in which a man kidnaps women and inserts a live snake into one of his victims' bodies. Is that the sort of thing that sells books these days?
I guess we would have to say yes, judging from the fact that Patterson's books are, even as thrillers go, particularly graphic, particularly violent, and they certainly sell. So,
except,
you know, I think that so just one last point I'd make is that you know, we're talking about this in the context of books and book publishing, but you know, if you kind of pull back the lens a little bit and you think, you know, you certainly wouldn't express any sort of surprise at the fact that a Hollywood movie did very well at the box office that had that sort of scene in it. It's just that we've been conditioned to treat books differently, and I think that that's fine. I mean, I don't see why books can't be both entertaining and illuminating. I think that we should strive for that. But nevertheless, I mean, you know, one could argue that we're applying a bit of a double standard.
But going back to that snake thing, that actually was one of Patterson's earliest novels. I think it was number 2 or 3.
Before he had his big bestseller, Breakthrough?
No, that's not true. It was after he broke through.
It was after he broke through. However, it was around that time that he began realizing that the bulk of his audience was actually female. He originally thought it was a male audience. But as with in most of publishing, it's women who are book buyers. And he realized that scene was a little over the top in terms of disturbing, a little too graphic. And so he began to pull back. He's become a little bit less graphic over time in order to more successfully reach an audience.
We have to take a break, and we'll come back with more. My guests are Sarah Crichton, whose imprint, Sarah Crichton Books, is published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux, but she was the she ran Little Brown, which is James Patterson's company, from 1996 to 2001. Also with us is Jonathan Mahler, a contributing writer for the New York Times Sunday Magazine, author of Ladies and Gentlemen, The Bronx is Burning, and The Challenge. And we will continue after this. And we are back with Jonathan Mahler of the New York Times Magazine. His piece on James Patterson ran last Sunday. Sarah Crichton is here. She published the Patterson novels when she headed Little Brown from 1996 to 2001, and these days she has her own imprint at Farrar, Straus & Giroux. And the reason we're talking about James Patterson, among others, is he seems to be transforming publishing, and he also is responsible for one in 17 hardcover books sold. At least, is it all books, Jonathan, or fiction?
Novels.
Yeah. But then he has a huge, judging from what I see on the subway, a huge paperback sale as well.
That's right. I mean, I wanted to, first of all, speak to one of the questions you asked earlier, but also, yeah, I mean, if you think about it, his books are actually, each one of his books, and again, he publishes 9 books a year, each one is...
That makes Joyce Carol Oates look like a piker, doesn't it?
Oh, are you kidding? It makes certain magazines look like pikers. But... Each one of those novels is essentially being published 3 times: once in hardcover, once in paperback, and then once as a mass market novel in the kind of smaller pocket size. So, but you asked me earlier about how did this man go from working at J. Walter Thompson to being such a phenomenon, and. I just want to speak to it because it's interesting. I mean, one of the things that really struck me about him was just how unbelievably ambitious he is. And the fact is, I mean, you can imagine perhaps an advertising executive who's maybe a frustrated writer and spends his weekends writing novels, gets them published every few years, and feels proud of this hobby he has as a novelist.
As he's running one of the world's largest advertising agencies.
Exactly. Maybe instead of going out and playing golf on the weekend, he'd work on his novel. But the remarkable thing about Patterson is that this was not a hobby for him. He was working at J. Walter Thompson at one point, CEO of J. Walter Thompson and creative director before that, and at the same time, he was determined to become a best-selling novelist.
Now, can I interrupt for just a second? He began publishing in 1976, but his breakthrough novel, Along Came a Spider, wasn't released until 1993. That's a big gap. Mm-hmm. What happened?
That's right. During those years, he made various attempts at mass-market novels, and he wrote some really terrible books that were... violent and in many cases he was sort of following different trends. I mean, he tried to write a demonic baby novel, kind of to cash in on the sort of Rosemary's Baby omen phenomenon. He tried to write a Wall Street thriller the year that the film Wall Street came out. So he was trying to catch a wave, basically. And again, this is what he wanted to do was, while running this advertising agency, was not write some novels for his own edification to sort of fulfill some dream of being a published author. He was trying to write a best-selling book. And I mean, I think that's most clear because his first novel, which was published in 1976 or 77, which I read, it's called The Thomas Berryman Number. It's quite a you could call it a literary novel. It's noir. It's very noir, but it's very well done noir, and it has some very nice writing in it. And it's a little bit a little convoluted, a little dark. There isn't sort of a clear good guy and a bad guy, and it's really a nice piece of work. And he really quickly kind of turned away from that when the book didn't sell. It sold something like 10,000 copies, which is, you know, just a fraction of what he sells now. And he moved away from it very, very deliberately. So,
and Along Came a Spider was his breakthrough. That was 1993, 3 years before you wound up at Little Brown.
Right.
What was the James Patterson phenomenon like when you arrived?
It was already, I showed up in time to publish book number three. But he already had his sights on really dominating the publishing universe. I mean, he really... he had everything figured out. He, for instance, if you pick up one of his novels, they always have these incredibly short chapters. They'll be like a page and a half.
And the copy's like ad copy to some degree.
Totally like ad copy, which when he would turn in a manuscript, it would be turned in triple spaced, which basically meant you had about 60 words on a given page. And he explained to me that it's because he wanted the reader from me on or anybody else to have the feeling that the pages are flying as you read it. And so if you have a lot of white space on a page and the sentences are really short and the chapters are really short, you're constantly turning the page, flap, 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 flap.
A true page turner.
It's a real page turner. And he, you know, he believed in that. He designed all of his jackets. And at first we would try to design the jackets and he would bring in the J. Walter Thompson team and to throw out what we had, and he had, you know, his look, and he wanted a brand look. He wanted it to look big.
His name is a logo, isn't it? I don't even have to read James Patterson when I see somebody looking at one of his books on the subway. I know just from the typeface.
Yeah.
No, right. And it's exactly like the label on Skippy Peanut Butter or something like that. I mean, that's very much the idea.
Yeah,
and I think you have to keep in mind. I'm sorry to cut you off, but that, and again, Sarah would be able to speak to this better than I can. But historically, publishers have treated books as kind of unique, handmade objects. Each book is its own entity. Patterson was really kind of turning that on its head.
Yeah, and then when he began to move into other territory, he would take his same look. But for instance, our sister company at the time was Warner Books. And Warner Books had great success with Nicholas Sparks, who wrote romances. And Patterson decided that he wanted to go after that audience, which was in a way not very sort of collegial of him to go after our sister company's great territory. And he wrote a book called Suzanne's Diary for Nicholas. So he had the name Nicholas, like Nicholas Sparks, right there in the title. And he designed it so that it looked like a Nicholas Sparks book, and yet you also had the James Patterson name on it. It was a phenomenal success. The one thing that we have to say is, you know, often in this business, we've all known people who have said, I'm going to go write a thriller. It's incredibly hard to write a thriller, even a not very compelling thriller. It's hard to come up with those plots. It's hard to come up with those ideas. And he does it constantly.
And he comes up with a whole bunch of different series. On his fan page, his readers talk a lot about Alex Cross, one of the characters he created. What is it about Cross that gets readers so interested in him?
Jonathan?
Cross remains his you know, I guess you would say his marquee brand. And you know, he's Cross is a very sort of simple, but you know, I suppose to fans, sympathetic character. And what I think he was able to do with Cross, because you know, Patterson is not a writer who gets into a lot of backstory or a lot of context or description. It's all about the action. All of his books, all about the action. There's not much time devoted to character development. So what he does is he kind of shorthands his character. So, you know, over the course of just a few paragraphs sprinkled throughout the first Alex Cross book, Along Came a Spider, he introduces this man, Alex Cross, and I'll tell you a little bit about him, and it's kind of all you need to know. He's an African-American homicide detective in Washington, D.C., who was educated, has a PhD in psychology, I believe forensic psychology, from Johns Hopkins University, and who lost his wife in a drive-by shooting and is raising two small children on his own while living with his grandmother. Oh, and by the way, his favorite pastime is to play Gershwin on a beat-up baby grand piano. So what you have is a very sort of sympathetic and kind of vulnerable yet obviously tough character who's, and again, everything, I guess everything you need to know about him is kind of encapsulated in this very simple and superficial, frankly, biographical sketch.
Now we have a little excerpt from an ad of James Patterson promoting an Alex Cross novel.
I'm James Patterson, and I have an important message for you. Buy this book, or I'll have to kill off Alex Cross. It's very good, by the way.
Unputdownable. James Patterson's I, Alex Cross.
Was he already doing that sort of thing when you were there, Sarah?
Yeah, he was.
Was there a lot of resistance at Little Brown? Books haven't been advertised on television much. Now, a number of other authors have come along and imitated James Patterson because he's such a success.
I have to admit that I like to think I'm a good publisher. I don't think I was probably a great publisher for Jim Patterson because I resisted things like that. I thought that audiences in the years, the 1990s would hear ads like that and think that they were kind of hokey and old fashioned. And I thought that this approach was very old fashioned. And yet, whether it's old fashioned or not, it wasn't very cool or hip or cutting edge, but there's a very big audience out there who doesn't want cool or hip or cutting edge.
And they don't want to see Alex Cross killed off, obviously.
No.
Has the dominance of the big box and online bookstores like Barnes & Noble and Amazon affected the growth of this kind of publishing? Jonathan? I mean, for example, does he need good reviews, or is it more important for his book to be placed in the right spot in a bookstore?
That's exactly right. I mean, it is all about placement in the bookstore. And frankly, we were talking a little earlier about some of the things that Sarah was talking about, the book that he set in San Francisco, the Women's Murder Club. Similarly, he, by publishing 9 books a year, he keeps his name in the front of bookstores constantly, all year round. He's front and center. So that is much more important to him than anything else. And I think that the clearest example of this and is his most recent young adult series was a book was just launched in December, a book called Witch and Wizard. And it got some really nasty pre-publication reviews. I believe Kirkus wrote something to the effect of, the dialogue rings as true as a plastic bell, and the prose is so purple it's ultraviolet or something like that. And where do you think that book debuted on the bestseller list?
Number one.
And I don't know if it's still number one, but it certainly was for a while. So he's completely critic-proof. I mean, that's the reality. His brand has transcended all sort of all other media. It sort of hovers above now, and his fans are totally devoted. And frankly, when you read on fan websites or you read on Amazon, he has plenty of negative reviews from fans also. But I think people are, in a sense, just addicted to his books on some level. Even if they don't like them, they're addicted to them.
And they don't seem to care whether he wrote them by himself or he wrote them with a co-author. He needs co-authors because he's banging out so many books?
Yeah, and also he uses those co-authors in interesting ways. I was visited a couple of years ago by Swedish publishers who were in my, and they were in my office, and they happened to mention that James Patterson was not very well known in Scandinavia, that he was huge everywhere but not in Scandinavia. And then about a year ago, I suddenly noticed that he has got, I can't remember her name, but he went and he got Sweden's leading number one thriller writer.
Now, just one more question, Sarah. You have your own imprint and you want to sell books. If a James Patterson type came along, what would you do?
I would
start
wish
running
them
ads
well
on television.
I would I would wish him or her well. And
that's not what you want to do.
No.
We have a link to Jonathan Mahler's article on our show page at WNYC.org. I forgot to ask you about audiobooks, but I'm assuming they sell well, too. Jonathan Mahler's article that we're talking about was in last Sunday's New York Times magazine. Sarah Crichton is now the very happy publisher of Sarah Crichton Books at Farrar, Straus & Giroux. And I want to thank the two of you a lot for being on our show.
It was a pleasure.
My pleasure.